You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Mom life. We're surrounded with the message that it's the tired life, the no time for myself life, the hard life. And while it is hard and full of lots of servitude, the idea that motherhood means a joyless life is something I'm passionate about putting a stop to. I'm on a mission to help you stop counting down the minutes till bedtime. At least most days. I want you to stop cleaning up after your kid's childhood and start being present for it. Start enjoying it. I believe in John 10:10 that we are called to abundant life, and I know mothers are not excluded from that promise. Join me in conversations about simplicity, minimalism, and lots of other good stuff that leads to a life of less for the sake of enjoying more in your motherhood. I'm Ali Casaza, and this is The Purpose Show. Hey, sweet friends. I'm so happy that October is finally here. For months, I have been planning and dreaming this up for you, and I'm so happy to finally unveil what it is I've been working on. This month, October, is all about reading. We're calling it Ali Reads October, and the purpose behind this is for me to inspire and encourage you to read more often. Reading is such a gift. We take it for granted way too often, myself included, but reading is powerful. You literally have a whole new life in your hands when you read a book. A book can teach you something new. It can inspire you to make positive changes in your life. It can take you to a different level in your life. Reading is so important. I read all the time, and I wish that I would have started sooner. And so I'm taking that passion of mine and turning it into Ali Reads October. Every October here on The Purpose Show, we are turning it into Author Central. I'm interviewing some amazing authors this month, and we're talking about their books. And I want to see you use this hashtag. I'm going to be checking it every single day on Facebook and Instagram, and I want you to use it. Ali Reads October. Share with me, what are you reading? Did you get any of the books from the authors I'm talking to you about? Are you reading a different book? How are you taking this challenge to read more and putting it into action? So let's celebrate this month, October. Ali Reads October. We're going to talk about authors and books and encourage each other to read more books. I encourage you to get other people involved in this. Get your kids involved. Encourage them. Read with them or next to them or to them or have them read in their own quiet time. Share this with your friends. Let's encourage each other to get better equipped to live an intentional life by reading more. Hi, beautiful friend. Welcome to another episode of The Purpose Show. Today's guest is somebody who I have a lot in common with. We have the same name. We both love superhero movies. We both have a lot of boys. She actually has 5 boys. We both love kombucha and dark chocolate, and we are both passionate about business. We also both have a rags to riches kind of story that started with our husband's jobs not working out. Ali Worthington is joining us today. She is an author, and she's the founder of Blissdom, which is the largest international women's small business conference in the world. So proud of her for that. That's amazing. Ali just released her 3rd book, The Year of Living Happy. I've read it. It's absolutely incredible, and I am so excited to welcome her to our show today. Ali, let's dive in. Hi, Ali. Welcome.
Hi. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day and talking with us. I'm really excited for just, I think you can encourage my audience in a really fresh way, and I'm really excited.
I sure hope so.
Okay, so maybe just start by, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and your family and what you do?
Sure. My husband and I live outside of Nashville. We have 5 boys. So the baby is 10, even though I know 10-year-old doesn't seem like a baby, but when you have 5 boys, he's always the baby. And the oldest is 19, almost 20. He's a sophomore in college. And I have 2 careers, which people always find really confusing. On the ministry side, I write books. I wrote a book called Breaking Busy about getting off that hamster wheel of busyness. I wrote Fierce Faith about overcoming fear. And this new one is The Year of Living Happy. So that's the ministry side, really practical, but with a spiritual component. And I'm also a speaker. But then the other side of what I do is I am a business coach. Mm-hmm. So people always find it a little confusing that I do all of those things, but it really comes down to my passion is helping women be all that they're called to be, whether that is on the spiritual realm or business. And I love doing it. I am proud to say I've never worked an office job. And one of my boys actually said to me the other day, he referred to me, my 11-year-old, he referred to me as a stay-home mom. And I was like, buddy, mommy travels a lot. I have a home office. I'm not sure I'm a stay-home mom. I used to be. I was a stay-home mom for 12 years. He goes, no, you're here. You're with us. So I'm calling you a stay-home mom. And I was like, that's pretty cool. I'll take it. So business owner, yeah. Speaker, and according to my kids, stay-home mom.
I love that. I mean, that would make me so happy if my kids described me as that, because you do feel that pull, like, man, I'm really working extra this month. And then some months it's like the balance kind of swings the other way. But yeah, you always are feeling that pull of like, mom, work. And especially when your job involves travel, mine does too. And it's weird. And sometimes I feel like, am I gone too much, you know? Okay. So you have authored, I think, 3 books, right?
Mm-hmm. 3. Yeah.
So yeah, Breaking Busy. I've read that one. Fierce Faith. And then your newest one is The Year of Living Happy. So what is that book all about?
Well, it's funny. When I was writing Fierce Faith, I wrote it from kind of a dark place. So I wrote it all about overcoming fear while I was learning to overcome fear. My husband had developed a chronic illness and life was just throwing us around. But I knew that I was supposed to write on fear. And so the way it works with me with my books is God will kind of give me a word that I'm supposed to write on next. And as soon as I finished the fear book, he gave me happy. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I don't know what to say about happiness, but I went on this journey for a whole year to figure out what's true in scripture about happiness combined with what researchers are pulling from science to say makes us happy. And what I love is so much of it is the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to create this book and have 100 entries that people could go to that's super practical. I said, here's exactly what we do to have a happier life, both scripturally sound, but also backed up by research. Yeah. And it just kills me that scientists will say, sure enough, we found the secret to happiness and it's X, Y, and Z. And we're like, we know that's been in the Bible all this time. But I love to marry those two things together.
Yeah, I love that too. And I think when a lot of us think about happiness, the first thing that comes to mind is just kind of like, I don't know, I guess sort of shallow and transient, where you kind of talk about happiness in a way it's so different. And I think it's so much more, has such a stronger and deeper foundation. So could you kind of maybe, I know this is hard, like in a sentence or two, but can you kind of unpack your definition of happiness for us? And kind of like, I mean, I guess this would kind of be like a summary of what you figured out.
Totally. Okay. This is fascinating. I can't do it in a sentence or two, but I think it'll be worth
it. That's fine.
What I learned was in the original language of scripture, there's no differentiation between joy and happiness. And all throughout history, Christians have always used the word happiness. They never looked down on us. It wasn't thought of worldly. It was just a little over a year ago, a minister and an author decided that happiness was secular and worldly and fleeting, and joy was holy. So now we've got a bunch of grumpy Christians saying, we're not happy, we're full of joy. And people are looking for happiness out in the world of things that don't really we can't find lasting happiness that way.
Yeah.
So my passion and my hope with this is that we kind of change the conversation from happiness is out in the world and it's fleeting and it's external, but happiness is inside, because we're commanded over and over again in scripture to be holy, but also to be happy, because real lasting happiness is only through seeking God. Mm-hmm. So that's like, if I could get up on the rooftops and shout that every day, that's what I do for the rest of my life, because I feel like it's such an important message, because culturally we've bought this bill of goods that happiness is silly and it's superficial and it's not what we should strive for. I think that we are supposed to be happy and we are supposed to strive for it. But so much of our unhappiness is caused by little things. And if we just make little small changes to the way we think about things or our habits, it brings so much happiness into our lives.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like your approach to like practically living out happiness is, I don't know, it's really neat and kind of holistic and just like, how can I bring everything into this? And I like how you really go all in. And I mean, that's really how your book is laid out too. It's kind of like, is it 12 sections?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. So what can you talk about, like the areas that contribute to our happiness? Because I feel like I feel like you've given us permission, like you said, like happiness is not shallow. Happiness is not different from joy. And if you're of faith, then you should be focusing on joy. I actually liked that your book has the word happy in it. So if we know, okay, it's okay to, we should be happy. We should be striving for happiness. What areas contribute to us getting there?
Our biggest area by far is our thoughts and our mindset. So whether I am talking to a friend or I am talking to somebody for business coaching, I tell everyone 80% of our happiness, 80% of our success or failure in business, 80% of everything is internal. It is how we're thinking, how we're talking to ourselves, because most of us have on play this kind of negative loop of self-criticism. And I believe we have to practice self-compassion as opposed to self-criticism. Because if the one voice we hear more than anybody's voice in our heads all the time is our own, and most of the time that is, oh, I can't believe I made that mistake. I'm so dumb. Things will never work out. All of those things, we rob us of our own happiness than we can have. So many people, they think, well, you know, happiness is in the external. That would be the other 20%. But the 20% that's external would be our resources, our time, our community. But 80% of it, that's the internal game. And once we become aware of our thought life and we kind of bring it into balance, that's when we can find real happiness. Because sometimes, unfortunately, because of lessons we've learned from other people, habits we've learned from our own families, we talk to ourselves in a way that we would never allow. And I tell people, don't talk to yourself in a way that you wouldn't allow people to talk to your own children. We would never let people talk to our kids the way we talk to ourselves.
Right. I love that. I've never heard anyone say that. And that is like, I mean, that's an amazing rule of thumb. It's I love that. So you have this fantastic chapter in the book about, kind of talks about like social media and comparison and how that damages our happiness. And then that's another thing I love too. You talk a lot about like what creates happiness and how we can seek it out, but also like protecting ourselves from what is hurting our happiness. So I know we kind of do something, I mean, in some ways our jobs are similar and they involve a lot of social media and being on the computer and dealing with, I think when you're in the public eye in any way, you just, I mean, you can have people that help you manage all the comments and stuff, but you see hurtful things, you see negative things and feedback and book reviews and all that kind of hurtful stuff. How do you balance staying connected and showing up for what you do and showing up for the women that you serve, but also having boundaries of social media and feeding that happiness for yourself?
Well, I have a rule that if I'm not emotionally healthy, I'm not going on social media. So if I am depressed, if I am sad, if I have PMS, if somebody's hurt my feelings, if I need affirmation from outside, like if I want to go on social media to post something so people be like, you're great, or your hair looks cute, I do not allow myself to even pick up the iPhone because I'm not emotionally healthy enough for it. And what I found in research, the research started coming out a couple of years ago, but more and more is coming out all the time, that the more time we spend on social media, the more depressed we are, because subconsciously, we can't help but compare our lives to everyone's highlight reel. Like it's brain science. We can't deny it anymore. But I wrote about this in Breaking Busy. You probably have heard this before, but the way we can use social media and not get depressed is use it and actually engage with people. So when we like things and we comment and we engage, it protects us from just passively scrolling. Passively scrolling is a recipe for depression on social. So that's what I do. If I'm not, you know, if the dog is throwing up and I'm cleaning the carpet, I'm not allowed to go on Instagram and look at people's vacation photos. I'm not in the right headspace. Can't do it. And then also I limit the public's access to me really carefully. So I have a Facebook group that I run kind of my people, and I'm there all the time, whether I'm in a good mood or not, but I'm not, you know, doing Instagram TV and having comments from all over the world coming in, because it is hurtful and it is weird. So could I, you know, gain more followers and build my business even bigger if I lived on social media all the time? Yeah. But I just, for me, it's not a healthy way to live, and it's not a healthy way for me to live as a wife or a mom.
Yeah. It's not worth it. So I'd love to know from you, for mothers specifically, what are some of the like major things that rob mothers specifically of happiness?
Oh, such a good question. The biggest thing is this idea that our mothering is supposed to look a certain way. I remember when all my kids were little, I said to my mother-in-law, we were at her house, she was making breakfast and she was in a good mood. And I said, I wanted to be the kind of mother that was really happy and I made big breakfast and everything was great. And I said, but everything's really hard. And when I'm cooking and all the kids are fighting or under my feet or they're spilling milk all over the place, I'm just not as happy as you are. And I watch you being happy and cooking and being calm. And I wish I had that. And she said, I didn't have that when all the kids were little. I have that because you're visiting. And I was like, oh, she said, I was just like you when I was in the throes of it. And that was just, I don't know how I didn't put two and two together, but it was such an eye-opening moment for me because I realized, oh, I'm in a hard season and it's supposed to be hard. When you have a bunch of little kids, it's just difficult. It's just, that's just life. But when we can learn to give ourselves grace and go, you know what? I'm not supposed to be Mary Poppins today. I'm just supposed to be keeping the kids alive because they want to jump off the roof. Right. And go, this is the season that I'm in. Things don't have to be perfect. Things are okay. If my rule was always, I made my boys feel loved, if they were able to give and receive love to each other and they had the beginnings of taking personal responsibility for themselves, everything else was gravy. It didn't matter if when I went to bed, the dishes were in the sink or the toys were all over the floor. That doesn't matter when they're grown men. It doesn't matter when they're 15 years old. What matters is they know how to give and receive love. They know how to begin to take care of themselves and take responsibility for themselves. If I did those things, I was winning it as a mom. So luckily when my kids were little, there wasn't Pinterest and there wasn't, and to be quite honest, there wasn't Instagram. Because if I had all of that, I would have been the most depressed mom ever because I would have been comparing myself to the pictures we see and, you know, not knocking it, but looking good for photos that can be posted on Instagram or Pinterest is a whole business model. Mm-hmm. So when we see a woman and her house is pristine and it's professionally decorated and her kids look amazing and, you know, her hair's done, there's probably 10 people in the background that get that done. That's nobody's real life.
Absolutely.
I'm just glad that when my kids were little, I didn't raise them with me feeling that extra pressure on myself.
Yeah, I love that. Most people know I'm a blogger and a podcaster, but that's really just where the inspiration happens. I can only scrape the surface of equipping you to bring positive change to your life here. That's why I create online courses on my private, students-only platform. I don't spend months creating courses for no reason. This is where the action is. My courses are for the serious doers out there. If you want to see focused, real change happen in your life, change that lasts, this is what my courses are for. This is where I dive all the way into actually implementing minimalism in your home and simplification to the cluttered parts of your life as a mom. We get legit detailed in these courses. My students have incredible success rates that they share in our private students community, and you can see some of their testimonials on my website. I work really hard to keep my courses priced as low as I can, but you guys know I totally get being on a crazy tight budget, which is why I also have payment plans available. My courses are different from each other, and they each serve different purposes and will take you to different places in your life. Don't overthink which one to start with. Just go to the website and pick one that's resonating with you and enroll. For Purpose Show listeners only, you can take 10% off any course you choose with the code PURPOSESHOW. Visit alikasaza.com/next level for the breakdown of all the different courses I have to offer, how they're different from each other, and which one might be best for you. I cannot wait to cheer you on and take you onward and upward. Motherhood is much too sweet a time to be spent in survival mode. So you talk about how we can choose to be happy, which I think that is very liberating because, I mean, I feel like sometimes I've been in conversations or heard somebody talking about a book, you know, that talks about this and they kind of come at it like, well, that's easier said than done. But to me, I think that saying you can choose to be happy is really liberating because you're in control. You can make that choice. Mm-hmm. But I would love to hear how you would maybe some practical suggestions on like how to do that. Let's say a mom is listening and she's just got little kids and it's in a difficult time. Her husband's working. She's at home doing the whole mom thing. And she's just feeling done in a mundane life like that. How do you choose happiness and create that?
Okay, this is going to sound really dark, and this is going to be crazy. I didn't even put this in the book, so this is bonus, because this is too dark to put in the book. I read this book once from, you know, this big researcher, and her point was, if we are unable to feel gratitude for the day we're in, that we need to think, what is the worst thing that can happen? Like, what happens if we lose our family? What happens if something terrible happens? And how grateful would we be if we just had today back? And so it's so dark, but when you allow yourself to go there and go, look at all of the blessing that I have with, you know, the kid that's spilling Fruit Loops all over the kitchen or the house that we live in, you know, one thing I say all the time is we have to stop and give thanks for the things that we once desperately prayed for. Mm. All of the details, the mess of the day, the, you know, things are never going to get done. They're never going to get done when your kids are older either. I mean, it's just, that's life. But if we can focus in and go, what are the big things that I used to just dream about and pray so desperately for that I have now? That can refocus our mind into gratitude. And gratitude, both biblically and from a research perspective, is the key to happiness. We can focus ourselves on, you know, not these 10 things that aren't perfect, but these two things or three things that are perfect. It can resettle us to decide to be happy about it. Because we can tell ourselves, oh, I'm so happy about this in my life. Or we can tell ourselves, the garbage disposal is broken again. Everything stinks and I can't enjoy my day until the repairman comes. You know, I mean, that's just, we have that power to control our own energy. We have that power to control our own thoughts. It's just, we have to get in the habit of doing it and give ourselves permission to do it. For most of us as women, we keep waiting for permission to be happy. We keep waiting for permission to be told that we're good enough. We keep waiting for permission to go after our dreams. We don't need it. We have it. And we've had it all along. We just have to be reminded of it.
Yeah. Wow. That's, I love that. So, I mean, you kind of answered my next question a little bit, but you kind of weigh out scientific research and what Jesus says about what happiness is and kind of align the two and show they're the same. And so would you say gratitude kind of all comes down to being grateful?
Two things that's both biblically sound and research backed: gratitude and the quality of our relationships. Mm. In fact, one study that I found said that a healthy quality relationship, it brings as much happiness as a $133,000 raise every year. Wow. Because when people have studied it, when you make more money, you're really happy at the beginning, or you win the lottery, you're really happy at the beginning. But then within a very short amount of time, your happiness evens out to the same level as it was before. Like, we kind of run at a set point. But the thing that will continually make us happy and keep us happy is it really is a discipline of gratitude. Practicing the discipline of gratitude, because it doesn't come naturally. We're not naturally grateful people, you know. Right. The discipline of gratitude and investing in our relationships, whether it's with our spouse or our kids or friends in the community, those are the things that make a happy life. When people are interviewed at the end of their lives, the big regret that people have is that they didn't invest in relationships like they wanted to.
Mm, yeah, for sure. And I think it's funny because at least for me, that's the first thing to go when things get really busy is 100%. Those extra relationships and friendships and coffee with my best friend and, you know, can't make it this week. It's really crazy. And it's what would happen if we turned it around and in the busiest times we prioritized it. I mean, I wonder how much different we would act from that, from creating that happiness during stressful times instead of, oh, this needs to go, you know?
That's always my default too. And one way I've fixed it this year, just on a really practical level, is I've joined a small group of women through the church, and we essentially promise each other that we show up every week for each other. Because if I don't have an outside obligation, I'm probably going to get tired and go, you know, I just want to hang out on the couch and watch TV with the kids tonight.
Right.
But because it's an outside obligation and I know they're expecting me to show up, I'm actually going to show up and put those relationships first. And it's made me so happy this year. I never imagined being part of a small group would do that to me, but it did. But now I'm realizing probably any goal I want to reach, I'm going to have to put like outside measures on it. Like, I can't force myself to exercise. I just can't. But maybe if I sign up to an exercise class, I will. Mm-hmm. So that's my next plan. We'll see. Maybe the next book will be about actually trying to get healthy. We'll see.
I hope it is. I would love that.
It'll be a challenge because if I do a push-up, I'll feel like a 90-year-old granny.
I feel like if you say that, then God's like, oh, okay, that's your next book.
Please, what you need to focus on next. Nobody wants to read that.
Okay, so I think my favorite chapter in the book was Escaping the Tyranny of the Urgent.
Yeah.
And I mean, we daily face like so many little mini crises, and it's crazy. And I think in different seasons they appear in different ways. But right now for me, I was just talking to my husband about this after I read that. Like, that is exactly what this is. Our life right now is just crisis at one after the other, like little mini things, but like right now that needs to be fixed. So having said that, can you share how you even begin to make the escape from that?
Totally. And the tyranny of the urgent basically says that the things that are urgent will take up all the importance in our lives if we let it. So we'll focus on what's important, basically what's on fire instead of what's really important. So what's urgent instead of important. And so what we want to do is go, okay, the urgent things that have to be taken care of, yes, we'll do it, but we won't forget the big things that'll take us where we want to go in life. And so I think it's kind of like a game of whack-a-mole, where, you know, at the circus, you hit one mole and five others pop up. That's basically living in that cycle. So one thing that I do is at the end of every day, I write down the three things that were really successful for me that day. And I'm grateful for them. Maybe it's I had a great moment with one of my kids, or I helped a client, or whatever it is that I did. But then I think, what are my three big goals for tomorrow? Because I used to do the three big goals in the morning, but the morning the kids need food, everyone's a little bit crazy. I can't wake up before them because they wake up at 5. Mm. Like, some of my kids are just early birds and they talk the whole time. So I don't have quiet time in the morning like that. So at the end of the day, three things that are really great that I did that day, because here's the thing, as women, also we don't give ourselves permission to celebrate our wins. Mm. And if we can go, here's three things I did really successful today, it's going to change your life. So three things from today that were good, but then the three big goals or the three big things that are really important for tomorrow, write those out. And then when the fires start popping up and when we get distracted, we can look, I just do it on a post-it note. I can look at it and be like, oh, here are my big three today. This is all I'm going to try to get done. And that is, it's so simple, but it works. And the thing with trying to change our life or develop a new habit or try to be happier, sometimes we think that it's going to require so much work when it's just the little tiny small things that'll have the biggest changes.
Yeah. And that also is empowering, like to just keep it simple. And it's that little bits of progress that end up making that new habit or changing everything. I'd love to ask you about mindfulness. I think that is something that we hear a lot about today. And actually, this kind of part of your book came at a perfect time for me, because I've personally been on like a journey of just really researching, looking in the Word and researching the overlap of kind of like this, I think it kind of comes from like a new age, like mindfulness, meditation,
totally, yeah,
all that. And I'm so drawn to it. And I love just getting still is so powerful for me, but just really looking in the Word for like, okay, what is that version of this? Where is the overlap here? What does God say about this? And so I'd love to hear you talk about, you've sort of coined this term, I think, of godly mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference and how do we cultivate that? What does that look like?
So the world will say we just need to empty ourselves out and, you know, practice a chant or whatever it is. And there's even research that shows how beneficial it is, but it's beneficial because we're getting quiet and we're getting focused and we're breathing deeply and we're calming our minds. So that's where that benefit comes from. But with godly mindfulness, we want to do the same things where we relax, because chilling out is so important for our happiness.
Yeah.
We relax, we take deep breaths. And we're filling ourselves with God. We're focusing on the things that will actually bring us peace and bring us happiness in life. That is the secret to calming so much of the anxiety we have on a day-to-day basis. Mm. Just getting quiet, getting focused, filling ourselves with Him, focusing on Him. For me, just on a kind of a rabbit trail, worship music is my jam. There's no way I can drive from here to Target and be in a bad mood if worship music is on. So that's just kind of part of our lives. It's how we fight all the things that come at us on a day-to-day basis. Because if we're not filling ourselves up with the only thing that's going to bring true happiness, then we don't have the weapons to fight against it. Oh, one other thing I want to tell you that's really fascinating that goes hand in hand with mindfulness. The one thing that research shows will calm anxiety and make people happier is breathing. It's so crazy that even the Navy SEALs, they get trained in this breathing technique, which is called box breathing. You can Google it. Basically, you're breathing in, you know, holding it, breathing out. That is the one thing that the Navy SEALs learn how to do to chill out, to calm their anxiety, to be happier. And I'm like, every mom should know how to do this.
That should come like in your hospital pack when you leave.
Yeah. Like if it's good enough for the Navy SEALs, it's good enough for moms. We need this technique. And sometimes just practicing, getting quiet, practicing mindfulness and breathing is going to make us so happy, but also practicing mindfulness as we go about our day. You know, here's where I am in life. Here's what's going on. I'm so thankful for my kids. I'm so thankful that the car runs and I get to Target, and praise the Lord, Target has that dollar section in front. Like that's the stuff. It seems silly, but just being aware and being grateful as we go through our day, it does make us so happy.
Yeah. And I think just the act, like you said, the act of getting still for moms is huge. It's so the opposite of how the rest of our day is going to go. And so for me, when I just sit and I'm just quiet for a second and I focus on my breathing, stuff will come up. I'll notice I feel really anxious. And instead of just emptying myself of that, giving that over to the Lord and just fill me. What is the opposite of anxiety? Peace. Fill me with peace and just being intentional in that stillness. It's huge. And it can even just 5 minutes, it's huge.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much guilt about screen time. Now, as a woman who has raised children who are grown, I'm just going to say, don't fear screen time. If you need to put your kids in front of a good cartoon, as long as it's a good show, put them in front of the show and go chill out, because you're going to feel so much better after and you're going to be a better mom for the rest of the day. I mean, I have my oldest son, never watched TV, baby Mozart. I did everything right. Bless him. He's just like his mama. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer sometimes. And he'd say that. Second son, I just gave up and let him watch all the TV they wanted, because I was like, I guess you guys are going to watch cartoons today.
Yeah.
Boy's going to be valedictorian this year. So I don't know if that helps moms out there, but we are not in control of how our kids turn out exactly. Like, they're just them. We can help, but there's a whole industry in making women feel bad because you let your kids watch some cartoons every day. Don't feel bad about it. Take care of yourself if you need to.
For sure. That's something that I talk about a lot, and just being like, what's the reasoning? Do you need a break? It's a babysitter built into your TV. Take a break.
Yes, do it. Don't feel bad.
If you're struggling and you're using it to get your kids away from you instead of like, maybe you could do something else and go outside and connect with them. But it depends on what's going on. What's the reasoning and the intention behind it? It can be such a help. There is no way that I could homeschool my kids and run this business without Netflix.
Totally. And because we hold ourselves up to this crazy image of perfection and what a mom should do, which nobody is doing that behind the scenes, we hold ourselves to that image of perfection. We make ourselves miserable, and I used to become this mom that kind of gritted her teeth and, you know, made myself do everything that I was supposed to do, but I was miserable at it instead of giving myself grace and just focusing honestly on loving the boys and having a great time.
Yeah, I love that. So I'd love to just kind of wrap up by asking you a final question about balance. There's the constant pressure on women to find balance and, you know, especially work-life balance. And I would love to hear your take on that. I just think you breathe life over everything that has to do with being a woman and living a good life. And so is this balance even possible? Is it something that you've attained or are aiming to attain? Like, what's your thought on that, finding that perfect work-life balance everyone talks about?
I think I have found the balance, and it's not what everyone thinks, because the balance looks different in every season. So I just came out of summer season. I only traveled once all summer long, and I would, you know, work during the day. As soon as work is over at 4 p.m., close my computer, walk 10 feet down the hall, and it's family time. So summer balance was pretty much all family all the time. Now, fall has started up and I'm in speaking season, which means every weekend or every other weekend, I leave on Friday morning and get back Saturday night because I'm doing a women's event. So balance in this season for the next 3 months looks like a lot of travel and a lot of work. But I don't feel guilty about it because the last season was summer and it was all family. So for me, I think balance looks like going, okay, what season am I in right now? What do I need to focus on right now? The other things are still there. We're not dropping the balls, but it's just that's not where all of our focus is. And to give ourselves permission in different seasons of life to focus in on other things. Because as women, if we are working on balance and that is our goal, we're not the kind of women that are going to just neglect something. We're the kind of women that are too hard on ourselves. So we need to give ourselves tons of grace and go, this is what I'm focusing in. These other things aren't taking as much of my time. They're just as important, but this is what I need to focus on right now.
I love that. Well said. Thank you so much for this amazing interview. I just feel like this is the type of interview that they're going to listen to and just take their headphones out and feel like a breath of fresh air, like just encouraged. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So as you guys are listening to this, The Year of Living Happy is out and you can get it. You can get it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, right? Anywhere you can get books.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. Well, we'll link to it in the show notes for you guys. But thank you, Allie, so much.
Thank you. It's been great to be on the show.
This was an episode of The Purpose Show. Did you know there's an exclusive community created solely for the sake of continuing discussion surrounding The Purpose Show episodes and to get you to actually take action and make positive changes on the things that you learn here? Go be a part of it. To join, go to facebook.com/groups/purposefulmamas. That's M-A-M-A-S. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you're ready to up-level and really take action on the things I talk about on my show and get step-by-step help from me, head to aliecasaza.com for free downloads. There's also courses there, classes, and ways that you can learn more about what the next step might look like for you and to focus on whatever it is that you really need help with in this season you're in right now. I'm always rooting for you, friend. See you next time.